Please be seated.
All right, we will move on to the definition of community water supply as recommended by the planners in the joint witness statement. And it's on page 8 of that document. Now, I want to understand each of the constituent parts of this definition to get an understanding for how broad or how narrow it is, or how it might be applied and how it might be interpreted, because if it's to come through into Plan Change 7, it's important that it says what the drafters meant it to say. That makes sense. You'd accept that that's a desirable outcome?
Yes, that's right.
So when we look at the first few words there, it means a water supply for the primary purpose of supplying drinking water to communities. Let's start with primary purpose, and I'm interested to understand what the primary purpose means, and we touched on this briefly before the tea adjournment. So when you read the phrase primary purpose in the context of this definition, what do you understand it to mean?
Well, it's first ranking.
Sorry, missed that.
Oh, sorry, it's first ranking, essentially. It is the key purpose.
Now, the key purpose in the context of a community take. You were here yesterday when Mr. Heller gave evidence?
That's correct, I was.
Now, he read this as meaning a range of takes could all be the primary purpose. Do you share his opinion on what this phrase means?
In short, no, I don't.
So when you read the primary purpose, it's a single purpose?
As a primary purpose, it is singular, but from the exercise we went through, it is the key purpose. So it is singular, but it is the key one.
So then when you think about the breakdown of the uses to which water is put, do you think that the uses and the proportion of water used for those uses is relevant to determining the primary purpose?
Yes, but I think also with this definition has, as I think you mentioned at the outset, three components. And if it assists, we were mindful of trying to strike a line, nothing even as specific as that, but there's an overall quantum from the Stirling example where it's down at 20%, and you know, essentially the primary purpose is a rural irrigation, as I recall it, versus the Dunedin or Queenstown end of the spectrum.
So let's press pause now, because I'm interested in the application of this definition to the Stirling scheme. So when you look at the proportionate use of water there, what would you say is the primary purpose of that scheme? And it might help if you have the table one from Mr. Heller's evidence before the Environment Court, which is exhibit TA1. Which I've filed somewhere. Page 11.
Sorry, just bear with me. I'll just read through the first part of it. I haven't seen it. I won't scribble on, I'll just make a notation of a paragraph. Table 1.
I've done some maths while you were reading that, and I'm going to give you some percentages in relation to each of the three uses in that table. So the proportion of properties / households watered within the scheme, 208 over 1353, represents 15%. The next category, stock water and dairy shed use, is 80%. And the remainder in the last category, 5%. So when you look at this scheme by way of example, what do you say the primary purpose of this scheme is?
Well, it's the 80%, the stock and dairy shed uses.
Now, hypothetically, what happens if the numbers in the first two boxes, the household water scheme and the stock water percentage, start to get closer together? How is it that the phrase "the primary purpose" might be interpreted? So is it the one that simply take the largest volume for a particular use, or is it more nuanced than that?
I think it would be more nuanced than that. The difficulty and the sole reason why you've got in this definition a general term such as primary purpose is a difficulty attaching some metrics around that. So if the community water supply is the single key purpose, and you've got two components at say 50% each, then you do have a an issue there in terms of determining. I think in that case you've essentially got two takes of water, one for community and one for the rural use.
In your experience, have those uses ever been separately consented, even though they are taken through the same pipe?
No.
So the only other example we have to work with is the Dunedin City Council percentages. So if we apply the same exercise there, my recollection was 57% for what's described as residential uses. When you think about that 57% though, and you look at the community water supply definition, means the water supply, primary purpose of supplying drinking water, would you have to look at the drinking water component of that 57% as a first step?
Well, yes, you would, but you'd, the overall evaluation, because it does, the definition does proceed on to address industrial and business uses. So it would, in some total, pass, but yes, you're correct, in my view, is that the starting point would be to ask yourself the question, what component is for drinking water?
So what we know so far in relation to that 57% is that 25% of the 57% is used for watering of gardens. So that gets the 57 down to about 40%, give or take. Now, there will no doubt be other domestic uses that are not uses for drinking water supply, such that that 40% may in reality be less than that. So hypothetically, what happens to that supply if the drinking water component's in the order of 20-25%? Does that cause an issue in terms of this definition?
In terms of it being community water supply, which is inclusive of industrial and business use, again, fact and degree would be difficult to ascertain, but I think it would the primary purpose would still be drinking water.
Is the intention to have, for example, the Dunedin scheme covered by this definition?
When I look at the three parts of it, the primary purpose, including industrial and business, the second part where it references TAs with their responsibilities under the statutes, and then thirdly, that one metric around 25 or more people, 60, then yes, it would.
So help me understand the relevance of the reference to industrial and business uses. Is that additive to the drinking water component, such that those activities together are the primary purpose?
No, the primary purpose remains drinking water to communities. And then the comment that may also be used for industrial and business uses is starting to send a signal that there's a range of uses, additional. So I wouldn't term them ancillary because I'm not, but additional uses.
I guess the point I'm grappling with here is, going back to the Dunedin City Council example, if only 20 to 25% of the residential component is drinking water, do you accept there might be an interpretation that says, well, at that level, it's not the primary purpose of that take?
That could arise where, say for example, there was an out of centre development which was primarily industrial or commercial in its nature, with possibly a small component residential. Then I think that would be a valid thing to look at. What is a take for a community, or is it for an industrial or business use? An airport, for example, would be a good example of that.
I'm struggling a little because there's been no explanation of the community water supply and the wordings which, you know, the wording which, you know, has been agreed.
Yeah.
And so did I hear you say that drinking water supplied to a range of uses, including for consumption by households, industry and commerce, are all examples of primary purpose of supplying drinking water? Were you saying something else?
Well, I think there's a fundamental issue is that it's nothing is clearly delineated. So the definition that's arisen through the joint witness statement is drinking water to communities.
Well, that would actually... stop you there.
That's right, yep.
Well, it may be different down at Otago, but where I'm from, councils either do or do not treat water to a drinking water standard, and I can think of plenty of communities where you're not meant to drink the tap water, and it says so.
Yeah.
But assuming in Otago everything's treated to, you know, a standard fit for human consumption, all water delivered by a TA, a territorial authority in Otago, is water, is drinking water to communities? Would all water, which is treated water, satisfy the first part of the definition, primary purpose of supplying drinking water to communities? Because it's all been treated.
Yes.
Or is it something different?
I think it would be that, yes.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. So we're sort of back onto Ms. Irving's definition.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm now grappling with, because my understanding, Mr. Tews, was that you had a different view of what drinking water, treated drinking water was, if it was used for those other uses. And I put a question to you earlier this morning about that. So let me see if I can clarify what your opinion on this topic is. Do you consider that once drinking water is treated, irrespective of its use, it would fit within the first part of the definition being supply for the primary purpose of supplying drinking water to communities?
Yes, I would.
So then when we apply that situation to the Stirling example, all of that water is treated, at which stage the Stirling example would fit within the definition?
Except that it's not the primary purpose of the overall... I mean, it's literally an 80-20 rule in that case.
You're going to have to help me understand then, when I read the definition, how I come to a different conclusion for that scheme compared to the Dunedin scheme.
I think it comes down to the primary purpose, and that's if you've got with Stirling an 80% use going into rural irrigation, that's not drinking.
But you've just told the court that
once
it's treated, it's drinking water, irrespective of its use. So then the inquiry doesn't go any further.
It's the proceeding to a water supply for the primary purpose of supplying drinking water.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Would it help if we just took out of the definition the word drinking? So now the primary purpose is one of water supply.
Well, that would probably.
And is that closer to what you're thinking? So the TA is delivering water. Its primary purpose is what? So it means a water supply. So a water supply for the primary purpose of supplying drinking water. So it's any water, regardless of its treatment, but the primary purpose is drinking water for human consumption. Is that kind of more where you're at?
Yes, essentially. Yeah. So that would include drinking, sanitation, household uses.
But if it was just, and to use a OTT's over-the-top sort of example, if it was solely water supply for the primary purpose of supplying a dairy shed, it wouldn't qualify.
That's correct. And as when we ran through this in the conferencing, it was, I think, acknowledged by most of the folk present that it's really difficult to have a metric that establishes a line. And so hence there were those three components. The first sentence that Mr. Moore has been talking about, and then the second one, which narrows it to the territorial authorities with their statutory responsibilities, and then the third, where there is a metric, which is essentially bringing over from the regional plan, that 25 people. So in other words, it is trying to distinguish between what in the circumstances where an assertion is made that this is a community water supply, therefore we should be exempted from PC7, but the reality is that its primary purpose is something else, albeit a component of its supply does go to, for example, households.
What I'm struggling with is how we draw the line between Stirling and the Dunedin City Council scheme through the lens of this definition. Because if your evidence is that Stirling shouldn't be captured, but the Dunedin City Council example should be captured, I don't understand on your reasoning how the interpretation of this definition draws that distinction.
I can only say that it would be literally the 80-20 rule in both cases. So with Dunedin, they record 19 as, well, unknown. That leaves the remaining 80% industrial, business and residential. The Stirling, from what I could see from the court's decision, and then more recently from Mr. Heller's statement, is the other way around.
So you put the industrial and the business use on the domestic, or the supply line?
They would be part of the bundle of uses for that a community water supply would service.
When you look at the definition for industrial and business uses, do you accept that water used for dairy shed washdown is a business use?
It is, yes.
Water used for irrigation would be a business use?
That's correct.
And so on, the definition, those activities are captured by the definition?
In terms of the primary purpose, no, I wouldn't have thought so, because they're not drinking water to communities. So that would be distinct from, let's say, a bottling plant or something else which does have dry cleaning or something like that in an urban setting which does require water, which has a... I think one of the... It challenged us in the joint witness statement for obvious reasons to arrive at even this definition. As I mentioned before, the key driver was to look ahead to the MPS FM again and the three tiers of priority and have something in place that gives some certainty as to what is tier two as distinct from tier three.
All right. So your definition, the joint definition,
yeah, and
your first up, which is...
Thank you.
An honour and a privilege, I'm sure. The definition set out there includes dairy shed washdown and dairy shed use. It fits within those words, but you say they shouldn't fit within those. That's not what was meant?
That's not what was meant, no. And I guess even though I am first up as a planning witness, I suspect the other planning witnesses will defer to myself or Mr. Pleasemaker. So I'll answer as best I can at this stage. I mean, all unitary authorities, regional councils, have the same responsibility in the same time. We have a plethora of various water, drinking water related definitions, not just in Otago, but across the country. The genesis of this water supply definition was actually one that I actually referenced in my supplementary evidence at para 29, which was from the operative Waikato RPS. Where it's termed domestic or municipal supply. And aside from terminology such as a reticulated supply rather than a water supply, and also it provides for publicly or privately owned, the general ingredients are there as per the joint witness statement definition.
Say that the title is limiting, isn't it? Domestic and municipal.
That's
yeah,
correct.
It is. Yeah.
And that's actually the key component missing,
yeah.
Possibly missing in your view.
Yeah.
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 When you think about a municipal use and you think about the Dunedin scheme and you will recall there's reference to some of that water being used for farms and irrigation.
Yes.
There's still a challenge in terms of whether they'd be in or out.
I don't think so, because at the end of the day, they have 120,000 residents. So the primary purpose is to supply water to those folk. Yes, there probably will be some folk on town supply who are in the rural area.
To give you another example, perhaps in the Canterbury context, where dairy farms can, take water, the volume of which represents a small town, so I hear on a daily basis. So yeah. We've got one large dairy company taking and using water, a large volume of water, which is the equivalent of, say, I don't know what figures are out there recently, but just say 5,000 households. And the take and use, the demand for the 5,000 households. What would you say is the primary purpose of that scheme? So the scheme supplying the single dairy farm and 5,000 households, roughly 50-50. What would you say is the primary purpose?
At 50-50, it's difficult.
Oh, I thought you were going to call it for the households.
Yeah.
I thought volume would,
no,
in fact, volume in that
yeah.
scenario is irrelevant. The fact that you've got a big farm out there
yeah.
taking a lot, it's
yeah.
actually still a domestic water scheme.
Yeah.
But obviously not, and so that's interesting.
My thinking behind this is the fact that, again, Tamara, I'm trying to translate it through into that threshold, so that later on when the health and well-being of the water bodies has to be determined, and then there has to be delineation between what is tier two, what is tier three, and what takes priority. And when you're into a 50-50 scenario, I don't have a ready answer for that, but I don't think it would just be solely on the volume, because if there is over allocation and a decision needs to be made, then obviously I'm pitching for tier two, that the households retain their allocation subject to efficiency and everything else. But a decision has to be made around whether that business can take the amount of water it can.
Yeah, that's the dairy business.
Correct.
Hence my thinking that it's still probably a scheme for domestic use, even though you've got one large outsized business entity also drawing down on the scheme. But that's not your thinking, or?
It sounds analogous to the example I just gave Mr. Moore earlier of an airport, albeit this obviously more clear cut, since it's purely a commercial use. But where a supply to an airport includes residences and the like, I think it's very hard to make that delineation if it's literally infrastructure based with one pipe servicing both.
Why one pipe servicing both? I actually don't know that that's so relevant, but
Just simply because of the infrastructure set up.
I understand how it all works.
Yeah,
but why is that even important when it comes to defining is this a community water supply or not?
Because the other component is the second component around the TAs managing and providing for that infrastructure.
Yeah, that's the bit that you could drive a bus through with this definition, I think, and it won't. My view is that it can't stand like that, just simply because it's all things to all people and probably will be when it comes to be implemented.
Yeah, and look, I readily acknowledge that in the witness conferencing, we had the time that we had to work through this, and it was... From the planners, from all of us involved, an attempt to, in the absence of very clear delineations and metrics, try and arrive at a definition which kept it as we'll try to be as clear as possible, put simply, and the reason for that is because there was further back into the document around that there was an exception for community water supplies, so then obviously we were then charged with creating a definition of what that is.
It may be more useful to pursue well, it's over to you entirely, and I'll shut up in a moment, but to pursue the thinking behind it in a more just sort of, let's not look at the words, but just broadly, what were we intending to capture, not capture?
Yeah, and that I've touched on that in the two examples where we have a breakdown are quite useful examples.
Yeah, they
are. Might be at different ends of a spectrum, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so picking up on that thread, if you think about the Stirling scheme and the Dunedin City Council scheme, was it the intention that both schemes be captured by the definition?
The Dunedin scheme, yes, but I wouldn't have thought that the, from as it's been described, the Stirling scheme would.
And then we go back into the circular debate about where you draw the line, and
yes,
it gets really difficult.
Yes, I acknowledge that, yes.
As the percentages come down. Because again, on the math, the Dunedin scheme, if only 20% of that water is actually used for drinking water and the rest is for those other uses, which are, would you accept tier three uses under the NPS?
The industrial business, yes, they would be.
You may end up in a situation where it's not too dissimilar to the math on Stirling. But it's useful to understand that the thinking behind the definition is to capture the, in this context, I might say the urban scheme, but not the one that has a higher rural component. If I can,
well, that's
those terms.
Yes, that's right. And if you were to, because this, I mean, it's just a fundamental challenge with any policy drafting is. It's almost like a bell-shaped curve, and we're addressing the ends of the curve and trying to make sure the policy stretches to accommodate 100%. It's challenging. The only way I would see through that is, as Jack Wolfert mentioned, is that domestic municipal supply is that's clearly has to be, from what I can read, urban, you probably would need something else around rural, which frankly probably may be easier to have some clearer metrics around it. That could be the alternate way of drafting a provision such as that to give, as you say, certainty where you're dealing at literally both ends of the spectrum.
So when you speak of putting some metrics in, are you thinking putting some percentages in, for example, as to the volumes used for different uses?
I haven't seen percentages in place, and I think to be honest, probably all of my colleagues in regional councils and out have probably hit the same thought process and use words such as primarily and primary. As the planners here have, and including myself have, I would not have the knowledge base or skill base to say it's 42% or 15% or the like.
Except there are some issues with the wording as currently expressed, and that it's not capturing the outcomes that perhaps were intended?
I think it's as with any policy drafting, it's not there yet.
Now, we've spent quite some time on the first part of the definition. I do want to just ask you a question in relation to the middle part, which is a conjunctive part, and is for the purpose of enabling TAs to meet their responsibilities for the supply of, and here we have drinking water under the Health Act and the LGA. Now, when we say is for the purpose of, what do we mean there? Is it a subset? Is it all of it? Is it some of it?
I think it's all of it, because it was again trying to put a degree of certainty and specificity around the breadth of this term by linking it back to TAs and more specifically their statutory responsibilities.
So when you think about the Health Act, my recollection is that the definition there was perhaps down the narrow end of the spectrum. It focused on drinking water supply.
Yes, it did, and that's obviously, you know, given the driver understandably of the Health Act, ensure, you know, safe water supply.
Whereas under the LGA, the responsibilities are perhaps broader.
That's correct. Yes.
When you look at those two references conjunctively in this sentence, and is for the purpose of enabling TAs to meet their responsibilities for drinking water under the Health Act and the LGA, how do the business and industrial uses fit within that part of the definition?
I think they'd fit under the LGA one, because if you drill down further into the LGA, you've got general and specific obligations, which Ms East referenced in her memo. So just without having to go back to that document to summarise those, the general one is the all-encompassing statement that the LGA provides for the community, including the industrial business uses. The specific would be the responsibilities that were touched on around, like, lifeline infrastructure or firefighting, those sorts of things.
The challenge then that perhaps occurs is that this part of the definition is focused on drinking water under each of those pieces of legislation.
Yeah.
And so those business and industrial uses, they don't fit within that category of drinking water under those pieces of legislation, do they?
No, but they'd fit in the one above, industrial and business uses, the water supply.
But when you look at the construction of this definition, the second part, it's conjunctive with the first, isn't it?
That's correct.
It's both.
And that again was the drafting of it. It could possibly be an or and disjunctive.
So if you put an or in there, it has the potential to broaden out the...
Correct, and that was the concern. I recall one of the concerns in the JWS, and the general ethos of try and keep it as contained and as precise as possible.
So the joint witness statement definition landed on the more constrained interpretation.
Correct, and you'll see an example of the alternate to that and the Waikato example, which is para 29, the supplementary evidence, where it's disjunctive, it is an or.
So then when you think about the outcome that was intended, and the outcome was, you say, to include, for example, the Dunedin City Council scheme, which is supplying industrial and commercial water, doesn't the second limb of the definition then knock that out? Given that it's conjunctive?
In terms of drafting, it would be probably, I'd have to say it would be better if it was disjunctive. But yes, it does seem to be the effect of it.
If it was or, it in fact would serve no useful purpose though, would it? Because the first part of the sentence is much broader.
Yeah.
And would capture those uses anyway.
Yes.
Now, I do understand the third component in terms of 25 or more people at least 60 days a year, and that's reasonably clear and objective. So having been through the exercise, do you accept that there is still some drafting uncertainty in terms of whether this definition is meeting the outcome that the planners jointly had on their minds?
Yes, I think so. And I, as I referenced before, I mean, you know, through any sort of first instance of policy development, this can occur.
I want to test with you now how critical or otherwise the definition is in the context of Plan Change 7. So let's say that the court doesn't accept the primary position that community water supply should be excluded from Plan Change 7, and so they're captured by Plan Change 7. And one of perhaps two things might happen. The first situation is that community water supplies are simply captured by the existing framework, as in there's not a bespoke set of provisions added in to deal with the schemes. So they would be, like all other users, able to apply for that six-year permit, either through the controlled activity or the RDA if that finds favour, but it'd be non-complying for anything longer. In that situation, the schedule would apply to enable calculation of the volume and the rates of water, and you say that now reflects the use for those, or the needs, and accommodates growth for the schemes. So in that situation, you accept it probably doesn't matter if the definition's a little broader, because in a sense the uses are being treated like other uses, and the critical issue is it's a six-year permit.
Well, yes, also the RDA relates to anticipated growth. That's always within the headroom of the consent. So that will still leave the pathway for a new consent, and then the only consideration, as we've mentioned before, is the duration, so the six-year term.
Yes. An alternative scenario might be what you've described as your alternative pathway, which is the bespoke set of provisions to enable a longer duration for community water supplies within Plan Change 7. So if you think about that as an option where a longer duration might be appropriate, the definition becomes more critical at that point, doesn't it?
Yes, that's correct. And further to that, Mr. Moore, I think, as I've been mentioning several times, because we're in the middle of giving effect to the MPS with the new regional plan, then yes, care would need to be taken with this, because I imagine it would be brought over into the new plan. And knowing planning in this country, probably adopted by other regional councils and possibly unitary authorities as well at the same time.
Don't put that on me.
Yes, it's just this the amount of, I mean, both, I mean, just as an aside, I mean, both of those MPSs are almost, in my view, they're de facto planning statutes. So they do establishing a new platform. They're very, you know, the significant changes.
All right. I think we might leave the definition there for now. I want to move on to what hopefully will be the final topic of questions, and that relates to the drafting in your supplementary statement. And I see that you've gone into bat for hydro and have recommended that the hydroelectricity schemes are carved out from the reach of Plan Change 7 as well. And I'm looking at your attached version of the plan change with some yellow highlighting on.
That's correct, yeah.
Supplementary evidence. And you say that hydroelectricity generation should not be captured by Plan Change 7 either.
Yes, so I'm just trying to find the preceding paragraph where in the supplementary evidence. Oh, yes, sorry, I've got it now. It's para 14 on page 4, and where I say, and sorry, it's about four sentences down, Having now read through the other planning witnesses' supplementary evidence, I've sought to ensure my recommended wording changes align more closely with those put forward by my colleagues. So just as a clarification, Mr. Moore, for yourself and for the court, I'm not advocating for hydroelectricity generation. I'm just trying to bring together, I'm not sure how many different versions of PC7 were in the various bits, but I was basically trying to get line of best fit with other evidence, just to streamline things a little bit. So I don't have any position on hydro generation, but I just thought the approach was good.
So in a sense, the place to tack on the carve-out for community water supplies fitted neatly with the carve-out being sought by the
correct.
Hydro generators?
That's correct. But as a point of emphasis, that's just, as I said before, just to ensure, it's, you know, a streamlined approach. If hydro resolve from that, then those words come out and the community water supplies can stay.
Right, so you're not expressing an opinion on the appropriateness of carving out hydroelectricity generation?
Absolutely not. This is just simply trying to ensure drafting is consistent.
Do you have an opinion on that topic, or is that simply not something you've turned your mind to?
On hydro, no, I haven't turned my mind to it.
Want to stay, I did have a question with you about your drafting in relation to policy 10A2.
Point.
Oh, sorry, 10A2.1.
Yeah. And Mr. Moore, I'll just put the joint witness statement one alongside
yeah,
that.
Yeah, sure.
Because you have changes to that as well. The planner's joint witness statement.
Now, you've sought to add in some categories of use into this policy, the first of which appears at subparagraph B, and you've constrained the application of the following four subparagraphs for consents to take and or use water for irrigation.
Correct.
And then at C, you have dealt with consents relating to hydro and community water supplies.
Correct.
So when you think about the range of uses to which water is put, are all uses covered by irrigation, electricity generation, or water community water supplies?
Ms. Moore, I should answer that directly, but I'd also just go back to my is that we worked through the joint witness statement, and the hydro planning specialist was there. And as I affirmed at I think close to the outset of this, I was happy with the 10A.2.1 changes as a result of the joint witness statement. So, for point of clarification, they supersede the changes that were in my supplementary evidence. And there you'll see in the joint witness statement at 10.2.1, it should probably a simpler and clearer way of doing it, because it partakes other than community water supplies, and then you've got the two ones around the instantaneous and volume of extraction. So that seems to me to be a clearer way of addressing 10A.2.1 than what I had proposed along with my colleague for hydro.
Sure. So the gap that I'm perhaps concerned about disappears with the joint witness statement wording, and that is your preferred wording.
That is correct, yes.
For that policy. Yep. That clarifies that for me, thank you. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Re-examination. First one I'd just like to go back to is the conversation you had with my friend about municipal infrastructure. So if we could perhaps go back to that definition in the partially operative regional policy statement, which I think was volume 3... Tab 3.
Sorry, I'm staring at my own.
So you want to go to the wording of the...
Yes, so the page
the old
CB...
wording, not the new wording?
How do you mean?
Not the absolutely current up-to-date wording.
Well, yeah, I think the municipal infrastructure definition is the same across the versions we had on the screen and the one that's in the bundle.
Thank you. I've got the document.
Yeah, so CB 651 in the common bundle. And looking at paragraph A, I just wanted to clarify, I suppose, the extent of the infrastructure network that is captured by that paragraph, being the conveyance of untreated water from source to and including the point of its treatment. Because I think... my friend put to you a question that it was simply the conveyance infrastructure from source.
No, this would include the treatment, but then the qualifiers excluding its distribution within
yes.
the urban environment,
yes.
e.g. like
yeah.
pipes down, subdivisions
that.
And the like.
Can I also take you to the definition of functional needs in the RPS, which is back at page CB648.
Yes.
And if you could read that definition, please.
The locational, operational, practical or technical needs of an activity, including development and upgrades.
And if we're thinking about the operation of water supply infrastructure, what is your opinion about whether or not it is a functional need of that infrastructure to have access to water?
It's essential. If it's water supply infrastructure, then the ability to source water is essential.
Thank you.
The water supply infrastructure is essential to source water? Okay. Was that the point of your question or not?
Yes.
It was, okay.
And so if we could go, please, to the provisions that relate to infrastructure in the regional policy statement. So that's CB... 564 to start with, perhaps. And policy 4.3.3, which relates to the functional needs of infrastructure that has national or regional significance. And you'd agree with me that municipal infrastructure is identified as regionally significant in the
That's correct, RPS. Yes.
So does... your view about water availability being a functional need of water supply infrastructure influence your view on whether policy 4.3.3 is relevant in the context of Plan Change 7?
It would be relevant insofar as you need, as I said before, you need water to take of water to support the infrastructure or for its conveyance via the infrastructure.
And if we go back one page to CB652 and looking at policy 4.3.1, would your view be the same in relation to providing for the functional needs of lifeline utilities?
Yes, I would. Yes, that's correct.
I'd now like to go
just
to...
pause there a second.
If we could go, please, to the National Policy Statement on Urban Development, which is tab 6. And so CB782 and over to... the definitions of infrastructure ready at CB796. Would you consider development capacity to be infrastructure ready if the pipes are in the ground, but they can have no water in them?
Functionally, no.
Finally, it's actually two more parts. My friend asked you some questions about the terms that have been sought in relation to community water supplies, and I think he specifically referred you to the Stirling example. Now, is it your understanding that that application was made prior to the NPS FM 2020?
Yes, that's correct, and also prior to PC7.
So if you were preparing an application for the renewal of a community water supply today, what would your approach be to the matter of term?
I would be... most interested in the function of it, which is actually delivering water to people, and so it's the planning and provision of the infrastructure, the water itself, to get that water to and treat it and convey it.
So it would be, perhaps if you could elaborate. Is it simply going to be a matter of just asking for the maximum term, or would it be a more nuanced exercise than that?
I think it would be a more nuanced way, because you are giving effect to the NPS, or sorry, correction, it's a resource consent application. So having regard to that, but presumably there'll be a, at some later date, a plan. You, for me, I think the key considerations around the term would, coming back to infrastructure, would be alignment with, speaking as if it was a TA applicant, with their design planning, including long-term planning processes. And as has been signalled, or sorry, set out in the various pieces of evidence, that's quite a long time frame. So in other words, LTP is a 10-year term, and refreshed every triennial period, every three-year period. So include the design of infrastructure on top of that, you're looking at a 15-year term. That would be my, if you're asking a question around the essentially a shortened duration, then that would be what I would consider to be the minimum.
Lastly, I'd just like to take you back, please, to the appendix to your supplementary evidence that Mr. Moore discussed with you at Appendix 2. And the page of the document with the pie chart setting out the proportions of water consumption.
Thank you, I've got that.
Now, he took you through, I think, the various uses that might be encapsulated within the residential component of that. But I'd like to talk to you about what is encapsulated in the 24% of commercial and industrial, and ask you to look at the paragraph above the pie chart.
Yes.
Can you tell us what is included within that 24%?
As described, diverse water uses such as industry, farming, retail, restaurants, hospitals, university and schools.
So would it be fair to say that there are some uses within the commercial industrial component that would relate to the health needs of people?
Yes, I would. Particularly where it's the institutional, the schools, the universities and the like. And then also obviously restaurants, food preparation, and possibly also retail. They'll have you know, potable water required for their staff.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Edmonds. Commissioner Edmonds.
So we've heard a lot about paradigm shifts to come out of Te Mana or Te Wai and the new NPS. So I guess my question for you is, wouldn't a paradigm shift under the new way of looking at water also be required for territorial authorities going into the future? And I'm thinking of things like garden watering, people thinking about how to provide for that themselves, whether it's large tanks and roof water collection or whatever it is. I mean, are we going to get into more of the Australian sort of pattern in terms of grey water, separate systems? What about metering? I mean, there's quite a lot that you read about metering changing behaviour and driving down demand when people realise it's going to hit them in the pocket, specifically, not just in terms of general rate. Do you think in the future that it, I guess, is also as part of the land and water plan exercise that's going to go on, that these things are going to have to be more actively thought about and addressed.
And the short answer is yes, absolutely. And if I can just expand on that. For me, there's two sides to the ledger. Territorial authorities are seeking an exception from PC7, but the other side of the ledger, if I can summarise it, Commissioner, is around efficient and sustainable use, and might be slightly coloured by the fact that I reside in Auckland, and we are subject to a water shortage, and with the nature of climate and that's going to continue on. So I would see that efficiency side being quite paramount with, if you look back 15, 20 years ago, its sort of methods or its encouragement, I think we'll be stepping more into regulation as we're seeing with efficient use. For example, rainwater detention and reuse for household residential purposes that don't need potable water, e.g. gardens or the toilet or laundry. I think it's very much, as you say, following the Australian example, as we have to manage water more efficiently. In terms of how that's affected in an RMA sense, efficiency is touched on in the existing plan, so could conceivably go through into consent conditions for future consents, or perhaps through the review of consents, because one of the things I did see when I saw that water conservation and management plan is the exercise that Dunedin City Council says it is going through to encourage efficient use. I think there will have to be a step change, but that's the starting point.
So just thinking about the duration of consents point, you have very long consents. What's the driver for a step change?
Well, I think there are a number of means. I mean, the first one would be once the new land regional water plan is operative, then there is in theory an opportunity to use section 128 to review those consents from TAs or a selection of them. The other way, I think, is, as I said before, is to, and maybe this is just the delineation between regional and district city councils in the Otago region, but when I saw that water conservation management plan, conceivably it could be recast as an RM type document that requires certification by the ORC in different instances as a condition of a consent for a take.
Sorry, can you say that again? I was just making a note of your previous comment. What was the second comment you've just made?
The second comment was around... sorry, I'm trying to throw it. The water conservation and management plan, which Dunedin City Council has produced as are required to do under the Local Government Act, it seemed to me that a document such as that could translate quite well into an RMA sense of being a management plan required for certification by the OIC in an RMA regulatory sense. I think it's probably a little bit too general at this stage, but there could be clear metrics around, for example, that 19% that is lost, unallocated, in terms of a condition which sought to bring that 19% down.
Yes.
In theory.
Heard a lot about that on Stirling, how that was not possible, but for its losses. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Justin, you talked about the review potential in terms of consent reviews, but by that time you've already done your planning and your design and you've built something and you've got a whole lot of sunk investment. So how realistic is it to think that you're going to get a paradigm shift?
I think it would
without starting on thinking about that now.
Well, yes, I agree. The thought needs to start, to definitely start now. I think that it would, the consent review, as I said, that two sides of the ledger would be more around that second side around efficiency, is looking at how the consent has been, or the end uses of water for which the takes have been used. Because if it's resulting in wasted water, then that to me that would be the key, or one of the key drivers of a review process would be to look at that.
So I'm just thinking that you talked about headroom, but
yes.
If you would look at some of the measures that might be possible. In terms of the territorial authority itself, limitations on what can be used for watering gardens and all those kinds of things. Couldn't you use some of that headroom for the future development?
Well, yes, I agree, because, I mean, the concept of a TA treating, having all that infrastructure and the cost of running it in place to produce potable water to, you know, spray across the lawn. I guess that's what I'm coming back to around the inefficiencies. You'd want to see a sinking lid on that sort of use through things such as rainwater reuse and detention and reuse and those sorts of initiatives to ensure that, coming back to the three priorities, that you're making the best use of the water you currently have allocated to you before seeking further volumes or rates to take.
So I guess I was just trying to understand the JWS planning, the revisions to that, and how that might relate to some of the things that we've talked about. So if you have that there.
Sorry, I'll just. Yes, I have it.
So I'm just looking at the 10A21D, which I think Mr. Moore asked you about.
Yes.
So that one carves out community water supplies, that policy?
Yes.
So that means that you're not looking in terms of community water supplies to have no increase in the historical instantaneous rate of abstraction?
Yes, that's correct.
So I might have missed your answer to a question in relation to the RD, so I just need to make sure that I'm clear about it. So if we could just have a look at the RD.
Yeah.
Now, so the RD, we've got Matter A, which talks about within the limits of historical water use, and then we've got AA for the community water supplies. So it my question to you is, the limits of historical use, they wouldn't apply to community water supplies?
In terms of A, well, yes, because AA is referring is the need within the headroom of the consent, if I use that term again, for population growth. But that's more around the I just basically getting the data together, and importantly the period within which the data is collected. For community water supplies, and bearing in mind a prior version of had 2015 to 2020.
I'm going to ask you about we won't go there. I was just trying to understand the answer to your question, Mr. Moore's question, I think, in terms of, and I came and had a look at A and B, and I thought that you said that you'd still be working, the community water supplies would still be working within the limits of historical use. But then when I had a look at AA, it talks about within existing water permit volume and rate limits. So that's what the permit says. That's got nothing to do with the historical use. I mean, they may be the same, they may not. I was just unclear as your answer. I know it says and, so I mean, just say A and AA, so I just didn't think that I was clear.
That's on my part for not being clear enough in my response. AA is, as you say, additive to A, so it is within the limits of historical use with the extra over to accommodate growth, but all within the envelope of the water permit.
The existing water permit,
correct.
Volume and rate.
Yes, correct.
So if we could just now come back then to the historical use and the move away in the drafting that we have from the window that the council had in its version 5 years or whatever
the
it was
15 going to 20,
yeah, yes. 20 yep. back to 15. So
yep.
I just wanted to find out what is your understanding of what that might mean in terms of community water supplies, removing that window.
Well, I think it just reflects when, as distinct from perhaps other uses, rural irrigation and the like, with community water supplies, because of growth, you'd want to look at the period as close as you can get to the period within which you're applying for a renewal or a new consent. In other words, communities grow, and it may not necessarily be for the 2015-2020 freeze frame. There may be a need to consider what's happened since then, so that within the scope of the headroom of the consent, that you're not, let's say for example, a significant development occurred in 2021. With a large subdivision or the like, so it's for a community water supplies. It's just ensuring that, and this is just generally, is that the you just basically look at the data from what I recall up to the or close to the time within which you're making an application.
What data are you talking about? Sorry, are we talking about? I thought my colleague was asking you a question around 15 years and what justifies that. Yeah.
Sorry,
is
I've
that
got
right?
the.
Commissioner?
No. Okay. What I was obviously not clear in my question, but you've got the original council version had a date in 2020 going back to 2015. And that was when the historical use was to be ascertained during that period, and that period has now been struck out.
That's correct. And as I sorry, just to clarify again, and that seems to be appropriate, in my view, for community water supplies because of the nature of continuous growth with that, with urban growth in particular.
Well, I guess there's two elements to that, and I don't think all the planners are on the same page over going right up to the point at which you might put your application.
That's correct,
I think there's some disagreement about that, but you're suggesting that for community water supplies, I guess there still remains that issue, doesn't there, about what is community water supplies in terms of the discussions that have been had. But if we leave that to one side, thinking about it in terms of population growth, for example, that's why you're suggesting that it should be the nearest date to when you're going to put your application in.
Yes, because it would probably work hand in glove with the capacity work where the TA would start from as most recent data in terms of population projections rather than looking back in time to the 2015-2020 period as a starting point.
So that's the forward-looking stuff. But what about the backward-looking stuff? Why is there a need to be going further back than 2015 and have it so open-ended, particularly when it may not be very clear as to actually what was going on at a very early period in terms of what the water was being supplied for?
Commissioner, I don't disagree in relation to community water supplies because why would you go back in time when potentially the population was a smaller percentage of what it is when you start commencing your development planning?
Thank you.
Alrighty, Commissioner.
Yes, just to follow up on that thing about population growth, and Commissioner Edmonds talked to you about more efficient use of water, and we've seen how the water is used for drinking water and other purposes. Should there be a wider consideration than just population growth if you're applying for a replacement permit in terms of those other uses, whether that they can be some of that water shared or used more efficiently?
Yes, I'd agree with that. In terms of it justifying your take of water as being as efficient as you can make it.
So, do you think that warrants any reconsideration of the a matter of discretion for community water supply in terms of the way you've drafted it currently with your colleagues?
In terms of the considerations for consent?
Population growth, which is what? DNA 3.1, it's matter AA, which I think...
Coming back to AA, Commissioner. Well, that's an interesting point, Commissioner, because actually the question of efficiency is not anywhere on A to F. In terms of the regional council discharging its responsibilities in terms of the efficient use of the end use of water, then that should be a consideration, in my view.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. That was my only question earlier on. Thank you.
All right. And I just want to just turn back to that definition, which we've discussed at large. I wasn't entirely sure where you're landing in terms of what you're hoping to communicate by the definition. So I'm not asking you to redraft it on the hoof, but just speak to it generally. What were you trying to include? What were you trying to exclude?
I guess I can just come back to that analogy, Mum, of the 80-20. Mm. I guess the earlier comment I made in response to one of Mr. Moore's questions around the drafting is inherently challenging because it's difficult to, you know, and I use the analogy I think of a bell-shaped curve, is to try and cover the extreme ends, one situation being a rural supply for rural industrial, rural uses, I should say, irrigation probably predominantly, but also has a couple of households that are linked in. At the other end of the spectrum is obviously a major city.
Yeah, so what were you, what are you trying to, firstly, what is excluded from community water supply, if anything? I don't understand what you wanted to capture within this definition, what falls out of the definition. Yeah.
Well, I'll use the royal we, if I may, through the joint witness statement.
You understood the phrase maker.
Yes, that's correct. I think it's a somewhat select club within the planners involved. Coming back to the line of questions from Mr. Moore, it's just extremely challenging to define or draw a line, which is why there's general terms such as primary or primarily, mm-hmm. which are used here and in other regional plan documents. I think the key thing was bearing in mind the Stirling example and others is to give some degree of or enclosure, if I can call it that, of ensuring that the sort of the three factors. One, it's for has a primary purpose of drinking water. So
for human consumption or drinking water for human consumption, sanitary food preparation. You know, some definition under the Health Act.
Correct. So if there was a further iteration, then it should be broadened in that respect.
So I've noted primary purpose drinking water for the purpose described in your evidence. I think under the Health Act or something else.
Yes.
Yep. Let me get to it.
Supplementary
evidence. Maybe not. National planning standard definition. Did you have that in mind, or did you have the NES sources of human drinking water definition in mind, or some form of Ministry of Health? Yeah. Broadly speaking, where's your starting point for drinking water?
It's broader than solely turn around the other way. The MPS definition is a subset of community water supplies, but coming to drinking water, mm-hmm. if it's a defined term in the in a regional plan change such as this, then logically it is a national planning standard definition.
Yeah. Okay. Just let me think about that. So means water supply primarily for the purpose of drinking water as defined by the National Planning Standard 2019. Would that be right?
That's correct, yes.
And that's what you've got in mind?
That's correct.
Primarily,
yeah.
That.
Yes.
Okay. And, but not solely that, because it could also be used for industrial and business uses, as you've noted.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
And in providing for that primary purpose of drinking water as defined by the National Planning Standard, there's a second purpose, and that is that the it's also for the purpose of enabling territorial authorities to meet their responsibilities under the Health Act and Local Government Act.
Yes.
But that's limited to drinking water, and again, is that drinking water in the second conjunctive part also drinking water with the National Planning Standards definition in mind, or something else?
I'd have to look at the wording, and I'd agree with Mr. Moore that it needs to be disjunctive. In other words, the responsibility under the under Local Government Act includes firefighting, which I don't think you need drinking water to hose a building down. So I think it should be an or rather than an and.
Okay, so let me think about that. And so if it was a disjunctive or, then what were the purposes vis-a-vis the Health Act that you had in mind? Oh, and but again, it's actually qualified by drinking water.
Yeah.
But as you say, you don't need drinking water to put out a fire.
That's right. So with that should just be simply be water, because otherwise there's no point in it being disjunctive.
Okay. So supply of water under the Health Act, what did you have in mind under that Act?
I think what we had in mind there was to, and this is part of the, coming back to my bell-shaped curve analogy of what TAs are. First of all, it's a specific reference to TAs or conceivably other parties who are, as agencies, are acting on behalf of a TA. And under the Health Act, it would be the requirements under that for drinking water, or potable water. Sorry, correction, potable water, I think, is the term in the Health Act.
For what potable water? For what purpose?
Well, that would be as defined in the Health Act, which I recall having gradation of, for example, end uses in terms of population and the like. And one of those has come through, albeit circuitously via the regional plan, of that final statement around 25 or more people at least 60 days a year. I think that has also had its origin in the Health Act.
What section of the Health Act did you have in mind? Is that 56G or something else?
I think it was section 69, but I stand corrected on that. I'm not certain. And it's a fairly lengthy section with subparts. So.
I'm really interested in what this witness has to say, what he had in mind, because it's not... this witness, what he has in mind. So I've now got the Act up in front of me. And it's not Section 69, because that's the duties and powers of harbour boards, unless you had harbour boards in mind.
Most assuredly not.
Oh,
no.
Okay, so it's not that one.
I did qualify by saying I stand corrected, and I'm very happy to in this case.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, for the court's perspective, really important. What do we have in mind? The harbour board? Possibly not. We've excluded that or something else. So, you know, that wouldn't be a definition I'd be happy with, because, as I said, you could run a bus through that. So what did you have in mind? It does, again, you don't have to take me to the Act.
No.
Because it'll probably get you to take me on some other occasion.
But what
did you have in mind? So potable water for what end use is the question, my question.
Well, it's really, even though it's really ensuring that all the statutory functions of the TAs, and I referenced firefighting just previously, those specific statutory are included within the definition of a community water supply when a take is required specifically for that purpose. So in other words, the take is to ensure that the households or residents have drinking water, but also there is a supply of water for the other parts are essential to a community, e.g. firefighting. So really, there hasn't been a great deal of thought into this, I guess, codifying or specifically enabling parts of the Health Act or even the Local Government Act. They're just there in some ways as a distinction point between the TAs, which are, you know, creatures of statute and have statute responsibilities, as opposed to, I guess, any other entity out there that, that seeks to take water. I think that's probably the depth of sort of investigation on that.
Okay. I probably would, if we're interested in pursuing this, would direct more more of an explanation so that we can understand what you had in mind more fully, because, you know, I took from your answer, TAs have a responsibility to put out fires and need water for that purpose, and that's fine. But has it also got a responsibility to meet supply demand from any developer, any residential developer or any dairy farmer?
Potentially, it's all inclusive of all of those. Potentially, yeah. And that would be under its Local Government Act.
That's under the Local Government Act. Okay, so that's why this definition is inadequate, because it doesn't actually tell the court what are the four corners of the case.
Yeah.
So my just moving away from that, you've talked about efficiency and the TAs having responsibility to ensure that the water that it supplies to users, whoever the users are, is efficiently used, as opposed to meeting, you know, 100% supply demand from users. That agree with that?
Yeah. Yes.
And I wonder, does, insofar as you have an interest in the end use of water effects, is insofar as territorial authorities have an interest in the end use of water and the effects of end use of water, is it simply limited to one of efficiency of use?
I think it will, well, there would also be the fiscal component, and that this, they have to, I mean, it's expensive infrastructure, they have to maintain, upgrade it, etc. So it's in their interest to keep it to a minimum, I would have thought, necessary for the supply.
So insofar as the territorials have an interest in the environmental effects of use of water, what is its interest?
Aside from, I'm just thinking in terms, I'm just casting my mind back to section 31 of the RMA, and how, because obviously the control more rests, the management rests with the regional council under section 30, but in under the local, I think there'd be under the local government, as I mentioned before. There's both general and specific requirements. I think at a high level it would fit under a general requirement of a council.
Of a
territorial authority.
A territorial authority, so a district council.
Correct.
Would have an interest in the effects of end use of water.
It would if it's resulting in inefficient use and waste.
Yeah, that's inefficient use. And when you say waste, are you also meaning inefficient use?
Well, that's correct, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But it's...
Does the Regional Council have an interest in the effects of end use of water?
Well,
Which are environmental effects, not efficient, not associated with the question of efficient use.
Okay, well, aside from water quality and water quantity should be welded.
Yeah, water quality and quantity need to be welded, and by that you mean what?
By that I mean that if we end up in a situation where there's over allocation of water, it's resulting in minimum flows, it's resulting in an impact on the water body, then there's an issue there for water quality, as well as for other end uses, increased sedimentation, for example.
Yeah.
So, it's not that the two can be completely kept separate from each other.
No, and I was really interested in understanding how this kind of all works, because if you've got an application by a territorial authority to take water for a purpose of supplying a scheme, which uses include industrial and commercial uses, both rural as well as urban, and those end uses of water, the rural and urban end uses, may have an adverse effect on the environment. Is that something that the regional council can look at when it comes to assess the territorial authority's application or not?
I think it would come down to the wording in whichever regional plan it was under, the extent to which they've reserved their discretion.
And is it your experience elsewhere, well, say Auckland, that when applications are being made for take-in-use permits, either urban and or urban and rural purposes, that those applications are usually integrated with territorial zoning decisions, in the case of residential growth, urban or rural, discharge permits as may be required, land use consents as may be required. In other words, the water permit is being considered in a context of development.
Well, yes, at the macro level it is integrated catchment management planning.
Yes, yeah.
And also with Auckland being what it is, it's through one council controlled organisation called Watercare.
And is that also the case elsewhere in the country, that there's integrated catchment planning?
I don't have the breadth of knowledge to extend beyond that.
Yeah. But is this what's been driven in terms of a paradigm shift also in the NPS for urban development, I think it's called?
Correct.
So there's two paradigm shifts.
Correct.
You've got the one represented in the NPS for urban development, you've got one represented in the NPS for fresh water, and they're both driving quite different thinking at a regional district council level. Correct?
That's correct. So the, I gave my view that they were almost de facto planning statutes given the scale of the importance of them. But in terms of the urban development one, then it is driving TAs and regional councils hard to provide for capacity, and then even when they've done that, is add another 20% on as a competitiveness margin, and then on top of that also be receptive to whatever else arrives that can, that can provide additional urban growth. So it's quite, as opposed to the very clear, to Manurota Wai.
But it's not. But the two NPSs have to be understood together, don't they?
Correct.
The NPS for urban development or providing for development capacity is not to the expense of the outcomes under the NPS for fresh water management and the health of waterways.
Absolutely correct. It's not too much of a stretch to go back to part two of the Act. And I don't think it's ever been the case under the RMA that growth is uncontrolled to the point where significant, where there's not a consideration of its environmental effects. So in this case, you've got, bring the two together in this context. It seems very clear that with regard to water takes to support urban growth and development, it's going to sit in Tier 2 or Tier 3 and be subordinate to Tier 1. which then leads to potentially hard choices around, is your urban growth in the right spot, or can you make the end use more efficient if there's a capacity or allocation issue?
Yes, and those are hard choices, aren't they? So in other words, supply-demand does not trump the outcomes of the NPS for freshwater management, particularly the fundamental principle of Te Mana o Tuai.
That's correct. That is my view, yes.
And so if this regional council has a concern about whether it has a fit-for-purpose regional plan, and it's my understanding that it does have that concern and the Minister for the Environment shares that concern, that might be a legitimate or relevant factor that it takes into consideration when looking at durations under Plan Change 6. Plan Change 7.
Plan Change 7, yes. Well, yes, but I just think ahead to when the new land and water regional plan becomes operative, and yes, there's a new regime in place that gives full effect to the NPS, what then? The process, because the drivers for the TAs, the other NPS, is pushing them, or not pushing them, is driving them towards making quite significant long-term financial decisions around infrastructure provision and the like.
But what's not driving them to look at the critical issues that you identified under the NPS of freshwater management? Is my development located in the right water catchment?
Correct.
Is it an efficient in terms of use of water development? Is it development which will result in the lowering of any over-allocation, whether it's quantity or quantity? There's no driving ahead of a plan. There's no driving council thinking, district council thinking ahead of a land and water plan which is compliant with the NPS for freshwater management.
It's actually should be the reverse of it, with the responsibility, in this case with the ORC under section 59, to have a regional policy statement that represents integrated management of natural physical resources, and also plan under the responsibilities under section 30. So elsewhere there are regional growth strategies which ensure that there are smart choices made around land allocation that represents either areas of high environmental value or significant constraints.
So the smart choices are being made by regional councils in terms of where growth is to be directed for land use, or the smart choices being made by a district council?
Ultimately, it's actually both, because firstly, coming back to the NPSUD, it references local authorities. And so for Queenstown and Dunedin, for example, that's a shared responsibility between regional and the relevant TA. But there's also a regional planning function, which can sometimes get... I'll withdraw what I was about to say. That it's an important function, and it's there in the RMA, and it's for regional councils.
Both territorial and regional councils have a distinct but overlapping functions, do they not, to implement the NPS for urban development and freshwater management?
That's correct, yes, they do. And it's most marked with the urban development one.
Pardon?
And with the urban development one, it's almost a shared responsibility.
A shared responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's the court's questions. Anything arising? None. Okay, very good. All right, well, thank you. that was very helpful, and might see you later in the process. We'll see how we go. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, probably time to take a, well and truly time to take the lunch break. And that's you for the time being, I think.
Yes, I was just wanting to check that that was still the plan.
Well, I think so.
Yeah.
Probably because you sent your witnesses home.
Well, I have.
Yeah.
Well, they chose to leave.
So, yeah.
Spend some time on the phone at lunch if that was not the plan. So, yes, yeah, so if we are adjourning that the rest of the TA case now, I think yesterday was a flag of possibility of looking at conferencing on the issue if you thought that was useful. I don't know whether you want to discuss that further. Or
we need to discuss it as between ourselves. And it would only be now to answer, I think, the court's questions as opposed to not answering the court's questions. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah. We could certainly invite questions from council, and that might be useful as well. We need to think about that.
Okay.
I'm also in a position like I was in Dunedin, where I've got this minute, and it's halfway drafted, and it's like, is it in, is it out? And so why it's not being released is this very question about do we ask questions, or are we just warning people that Mr. Moore is going to announce next Wednesday whether there was a deal done or not, and, you know, so we're sort of trying to get ahead of that, just let everybody know what the go is, that they might all be yet back into conferencing on the schedule, so that we needed to alert people to that much, and I haven't landed it because, you know, there may be other things you want to do whilst we have them in the same room.
Okay. No, that's fine. In that case, I would ask to be excused also.
Very good. Okay, no, very good. You're excused. And we're down
to
one lawyer.
Run amok.
Well, I was going to say, you can go and I'll take it from here.
That might be most of it.
So, gosh. So we're just adjourned for...
And then couple that with a growth factor over a period that...